Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, April the 22nd. And our top story today is that a coroner has highlighted missed opportunities in the care of a 23-year-old man from Broadstairs who took his own life just days after being deemed low risk by hospital nurses. An inquest has been held following the death of Gabriel Farmer. Well, Lucy joins me now with more details on this story. So, Lucy, what exactly happened?
Well, it's a tragic case involving a young man who took a fatal drug overdose at his home in May last year. Gabriel was found on the verge of unconsciousness by his mum and rushed to hospital by ambulance, but died the following day. The inquest heard details of previous attempts to take his own life, including a serious incident just 8 days before his death. On that occasion, he was restrained by paramedics and taken to the A&E department at the QEQM hospital in Margate. He had an assessment the next day and nurses decided he was low risk and could be sent home.
And what did the coroner have to say about that decision?
Well, the two nurses who saw Gabriel gave evidence at the inquest and admitted their risk assessment was incorrect. One of them said she'd made the judgment based on conversations with the 23-year-old who had denied any further thoughts or plans of suicide. Coroner Catherine Wood highlighted some potential missed opportunities and shortcomings on behalf of the Kent and Medway NHS Social Care Partnership Trust, but she added there wasn't enough evidence to suggest it would have made a difference on the balance of probabilities.
And how have his family reacted to the findings?
Gabriel's mum, Louise Knight, has been critical of the support they received and said she didn't feel she could keep her son safe. She's told Kent Online the main thing she wanted from the inquest was to help other families going through similar experiences. She's also hoping to work with the Trust and Mental Health Services to see how they can make improvements. A spokesperson for KMPT says they've carried out a review which identified some areas for improvement which they've acted on. They've brought in new risk assessment training and say they'll carefully consider any further findings from the coroner.
Lucy, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a Kent man's been jailed for his role in a major drug trafficking network. A Met Police investigation found a criminal gang imported nearly £9 million worth of cocaine into the UK over a four-month period in 2020. 35-year-old Nicholas Lynn from Guildenhall Road in Swanley has been locked up for more than 18 years. It's thought a fire at a derelict building in Gravesend may have been started deliberately. Four fire engines were called to Valley Drive in the early hours of this morning. Advice to keep doors and windows closed because of smoke has been lifted, but crews are continuing to dampen down hotspots. Meantime, a person's been treated by paramedics after suffering minor burns to their head during a house fire in Herne Bay. Crews were called to Pier Avenue yesterday and managed to put out the blaze. It's unclear how it started. Thames Waters warning new business plans could see customers' bills go up by 44%. The company, which supplies areas around Dartford, has announced another £1.9 billion of investment in its network. Plans still need to be approved by the regulator. Now, next today, there are calls for tons of illegal waste to be cleared from woodland near Ashford before the summer. Access to the site in Hodes Wood has now been closed off, but mountains of rubbish are already causing a nasty smell and water pollution. It's set to cost millions to clear the 27,000 tons. This man is the leader of the Rescue Hodes Wood campaign. He wanted to stay anonymous, but has been speaking to our reporter, Oliver Leonard.
This is a site of special scientific interest. It is illegal to even plant a foreign flower here, let alone dump some soil. So for any kind of activity like a digger, this should have been stopped immediately. So the fact that that didn't happen is incredibly frustrating for all of us, because we've had to take time out to submit reports, and it was like we were screaming into a void. And it wasn't until yourselves publicised your article that actually the authorities sprang into action and shut this down. Now, you know, after the shutdown, the tipping has stopped, but we're left with this legacy of 4 acres by, in places, over 25 feet deep of processed landfill, which includes plastics, toys, electronic components, builders' rubble, but also organic matter, chicken bones, sanitary ware even, and it really stinks.
I mean, yeah, can you describe the smell right now? I mean, as you say, it's not the worst the smell's been today, but I mean, people have been able to smell this from their houses. What?
That's right, yeah. So every, you know, instance of the smell really depends on local atmospherics at the time, wind direction, wind speed, etc. But there are particular days that we've noticed where there's maybe a very light breeze. Doesn't matter whether it's in the direction of the prevailing wind or not, but if it's a very light breeze and cold, damp conditions, it's almost like a mist, an invisible mist that rolls off in a radius around the site that then starts hitting local businesses and communities. And I understand from some of the residents that it has been possible to actually detect the smell of rotten eggs, which is the distinctive aroma of hydrogen sulfide gas, from within their bedrooms at night.
What hope do you have in the authorities that this is going to be sorted soon? I mean, it's, as you say, the investigation's been going on for 8-9 months now, and we're still in the same situation. So when do you think this needs to be cleaned up by?
Well, this needs to be cleaned up before summer. So I would say, you know, within the next couple of months. Now, considering it took 6 months to put here, I imagine it may take a similar amount of time to take away. But it has to happen, and activity needs to start immediately.
Kent Online reports.
Bosses in Medway say they won't back down until they receive proper pothole funding. They sent a letter to the Roads Minister recently saying an extra £50 million was needed to fix more than 2,000 issues. A reply from Guy Opperman said the £12 million already allocated should be enough. Well, we've been getting reaction from Medway Council leader Vince Maple.
I'm not sure what the Minister of Roads was thinking about when he wrote back to us. He's clearly not on top of his brief if he somehow thinks that the figure that we put into the letter, we were very clear, it's about road conditions, it's not just about potholes. We were very clear on that. So the fact he's chosen to take a different approach and a different understanding, I'll be generous and say perhaps he's very busy thinking about other matters on his mind with the general election coming up. Look, we're really clear as an administration. Myself and Simon wrote to the government in good faith, saying, look, this is the figure we need. It's not our figure. This was the figure originally created under the previous Conservative administration. And, of course, inflation's impacted on that massively, as it's impacted on many things over the last couple of years. I was hopeful we'd be able to organise a meeting to put our case in more detail, far more detail than you can go into in a letter, instead of which he's come back with ludicrous comments, misunderstanding exceptional financial support. If he's telling me we're getting £14 million, I look forward to that. I think he's wrong on that as well. So we've written back today very, very clearly, correcting him. He made out that we'd published the letter before it had been sent to him. That's inaccurate. That's what DLUHC did to this council back in December. So I hope he looks at this letter, reflects perhaps on his initial response, and maybe he'll want to come forward with a more measured response, because ultimately Medway residents, Medway motorists, Medway residents who are going along our pavements as well, because roads of course involve not just the highway but the pavements, they deserve a better deal than the one they've got from central government. So we'll keep making that case.
Meantime, residents in Tenterden say they feel forgotten after missing out on cash to fix potholes. The county council's planning to spend £8.5 million on repairing roads over the next 2 years, but the town isn't on the initial list of areas to be targeted. And roads bosses have confirmed when the highly anticipated Stockbury flyover will open. The £92 million project is hoped to make journeys easier and safer if you're travelling on the A249 between Maidstone, Sittingbourne and Sheppey. Daniel Rawlinson is the National Highways Project Manager.
Anybody who's driven through this scheme, particularly in the last sort of 9 to 12 months, will have seen a lot of change. So specifically in the centre of the flyover itself. So the flyover is now in, for all intents and purposes, complete. So the retaining walls are done and we're just doing the curbing now. And then we've got to actually build the road layers before it's available for traffic to use. We're aiming to open the flyover itself to traffic sort of July, early July to mid-July. Obviously, we'll always try and better that where we can, but I would obviously caveat by saying we've still got a lot of work to do, some key works, particularly on the north side of the roundabout. People will see that that's not as complete as the southern side, and we've still got a lot of complicated work to do on that end. But yeah, we're confident that sort of by midsummer we should be in a position to allow people to use a flyover.
Daniel was speaking there to reporter Megan Carr, and you can see pictures of the work by heading to Kent Online.
Kent Online reports.
It's been suggested Greenbelt Land in Dartford be opened up for gypsy and traveller pitches to meet an increase in demand. Campaigners for the community say the unmet need is due to local authorities across the county having failed to provide sites in the past. It comes ahead of a key decision on the local plan, which will set out provision for the sites until 2037. Aldi bosses have confirmed when their controversial new store will open in Ashford. There have been complaints about the location of the supermarket on the A28 in the Kennington part of town. Construction's due to begin at the end of the year, and it should start serving customers by mid-2025. Dover's Fast Track Zero Emissions bus service is set to launch with diesel vehicles because electric models won't be ready in time. The £34 million project will see buses connect Whitfield with the town centre and Dover Priory station. Bosses say delays to the electric fleet mean diesel buses will be used to operate the service effectively when it launches in July. Elsewhere, a rural bus service axed by Stagecoach has been brought back thanks to a new volunteer-driven scheme. The company dropped the number 3 bus, which covered villages around Faversham, saying it was rarely used and no longer viable. Well, now a hopper service has been launched. It's a 12-seater bus that will be driven by volunteers and has been funded by Faversham Town Council.
Kent Online News.
We're going to move on to education next because parents of children attending an SEND school in Medway say they've been left in the lurch as bosses say they can no longer attend due to health and safety concerns. Families were sent a letter saying the placement of students at VTC Independent School in Sittingbourne has ceased with immediate effect on April the 10th. Kylie Hollington Coombe's son Riley is one of those who was told not to come back after the Easter break. She's been speaking to reporter Jo Crossley.
Regarding my son that attends a SEN school in Sittingbourne, a random phone call out of the blue within half term from Medway Council regarding that my son can now no longer attend school after the half term on the grounds of health and safety and safeguarding issues and concerns, with no more information given to us regarding that. And the whole process going forward, it's just lack of communication really with Medway Council. I still don't now know a week later the exact reasons why, if I'm honest. It's a horrible situation to be in, being told that your child all of a sudden cannot attend his school that he was happy in.
Just talk me through the stress that you've just mentioned of this whole kind of situation that's been going on for the last week. How has it all made the family feel?
Oh, absolutely awful. I know I felt awful. I've cried quite a lot. I've been and felt very anxious and stressed all over the place. I feel unfocused on anything else that I'm trying to do or I've got set in place to do. Obviously, it's your child. He's my child. I'm going to worry about him. I'm going to worry about his future. I'm going to worry about, I don't want him just sitting in his bedroom with nothing to do. Worry about his thoughts and feelings. And that is something that he does sometimes struggle with, and understanding his own thoughts and feelings. So something like this that's happened and I can't answer any questions that he's asking me, that's also heartbreaking as well, to be honest, because I can't give him them answers that he's asking. And for... yeah, his own self-esteem. It's the whole process is just unhealthy for all of us, to be honest.
And just talk to me through how much of a mess it's been in terms of the communication side of it. I don't want to put words in your mouth, obviously, but from what you've told me, it you've kind of been told one thing by one organisation and one thing by another. Just talk me a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah, mind-boggling, I would express that as. Absolutely mind-boggling. One minute there's one thing said, the next minute it's either unsaid or hasn't been said, or something else has then been put in place to cover up what the last person said. No one's really saying a lot in terms of communication. I feel like as a parent, we've just been left in the lurch and just left to figure it out for ourselves in a way. There's no honesty, I feel.
The interim head teacher says the concerns were related to safeguarding processes. They're in ongoing talks with the council to resolve the problem. Staying with education, and bosses have confirmed a new secondary school in Ashford will be ready to welcome students next summer. Building work at Chilmington Green Secondary School started in February, almost 2 years after it was first approved. Once finished, it will have room for more than 1,100 pupils and feature 9 science labs and sports facilities. Again, Christmas tree farmer says his business could go bankrupt after he was told to pay almost £80,000 in business rates. Rob Schroeder, who owns the site off Gravelly Bottom Road in Kingswood, opens a shop there just 5 weeks a year. Officials have claimed it should be classed as retail and the case has been taken to tribunal. A rare Victorian signal box near Canterbury that was earmarked for demolition has been saved by a village campaign. Residents fought to save the site in Chartham and now contractors have moved in to begin a full restoration. Councillors are in discussions with Network Rail over the possibility of leasing it in the future for some kind of community benefit. And gin from a Kent distillery has won a top award just months after hitting the market. Two friends from Rootham Heath started Invoke Distillery in 2019, and now their small batch gin has won a gold medal at the London Spirits Competition. It was judged on quality, value and packaging.
Kent Online Sport.
Football and Gillingham's chances of promotion this season are over. They were beaten 2-1 at already promoted Mansfield Town at the weekend. Tim Dieng had taken the lead for the Gills before the home side scored twice late in the second half. Well, we'll hear from the midfielder shortly, but first here's Gills head coach Stephen Clements.
I thought we was exactly where I wanted us to be in the first half. The game plan was working perfectly. It was good to, you could see what some like Dom Jeffries brings back to the team and Josh Andrews up top. We were on top. Unfortunately, I've had to make changes. Johnny Williams had a couple of kicks in the first half, and so obviously he had to come on. And Dom Jeffries and Josh Andrews are never going to last a game at the moment because they've been out for a significant period of time. So losing them was a bit of a blow for us, and it changed things. But there was lessons in that today for some of our younger players. Which they can take from if we want to be successful at this football club, and that's what I've told them in the dressing room, because there were things we still got wrong and we have to make sure we don't make some of those mistakes again to let them back into the game.
1-1, even then we were kind of in a good position. They've scored a quality goal at that point. You just put your hands up and say, look, wasn't much we could do about that.
You can't do a lot about the second goal, but you can do something about the first one, and obviously I know exactly what goes wrong with that one. And it's basically just stand with a runner. So, look, it's a mistake. People make mistakes, but you have to learn from them. You can't make them again. But we'll dust ourselves down. We'll come back in this week, and we'll still try and finish the season as strong as we can.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's all you can do.
Absolutely. I mean, top seven at the moment probably looks out of reach now, doesn't it? But it doesn't mean to say that you don't want to finish on the high. And it's Doncaster, one game left.
Yeah, Doncaster, one game left. And obviously, it's a home game, so let's try and send our supporters happy in the summer. And my aim will be to give them something to look forward to next season. I think the team you saw in the first half is somewhere nearer where I want to be. And obviously, adding to the performance last week, there's some good signs now with getting some of our players back and some of the players that I need in the team. So that's a positive. But we've still got plenty of improvement to do over the summer as well.
That first 45 minutes, probably some of the best football we've played since you were head coach. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, we played well. We had penetration. I had some good footballers on the pitch, and we matched them up. We went to a diamond today, and we thought not just to match them up and stop them, we felt we could hurt them on the outsides of that diamond, and we split our strikers a little bit. Conor Mahoney played a bit more advanced. He wasn't bad as a right winger. Obviously, they had this defensive responsibilities to work with as well. But unfortunately, we ran out of steam, and I think if we hadn't run out of steam, I think it could have been a different day.
As promised, here is midfielder and goalscorer Tim Dieck.
Very frustrating because we started the game well. I think we first half we were brilliant, I think, 1-0 up. Then we came back in second half. The first goal, I think, disrupted a bit everything in our game. And yeah, and the second goal was a worldie. Fair play to the guy who scored. But yeah, that's frustrating because we showed some very good bits against a team that's getting promoted. So that shows that we can compete against the best team in that division as well. But yeah, we failed short today, and yeah, it's unfortunate.
I think the fans showed their appreciation at the end, yeah, for the first half performance and the way you tried to dig deep in the second to obtain the result. Sadly, just wasn't to be.
Yeah, we gave everything, I think. We even in the second half, when we were 2-1 down, we tried. But yeah, we fell short, like I said. And yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, it's gutting, isn't it? And looks like the top seven's out of our reach now, but it doesn't mean to say you don't want to finish the season strongly. There's one more game left, home to Doncaster, and I guess you'll want to win that just to send some positive thoughts with the fans.
Yeah, obviously, we're not giving up. There's one game left at home in front of our fans. We want it to be a great day to end the season on a positive note, I think. And yeah, so we're going to prepare it well this week and give everything on Saturday against Doncaster. And yeah, we're going to go for the 3 points. Yeah.
Can you talk me through your goal? It looked like it was an impossible angle for you to score, but you found a way.
Yeah, so Johnny played a good pass behind their defence. I tried to cross it first time to Josh Andrews, but the guy tackled and blocked it, but he came back into my feet. And yeah, I was basically on the byline, on the goal line, and but in my head, when I got the ball, I didn't even look the cutback. I knew I was shooting, and I tried to hide it and send the keeper to open the front post, and then I just slide it in there, yeah.
As you heard, Gillingham's final game of the season is against Doncaster Rovers on Saturday. Staying with football, and Ebbs Fleet have avoided relegation from the National League. Danny Searle has described Saturday's goalless draw at Boreham Wood as the best day of his career. He took over the side in February. And Maidstone United have secured their place in the National League South playoffs. They beat Hampton and Richmond 5-1 on Saturday. It means they finished the season fourth and will play Averley on Wednesday night. The winners will face Worthing next Sunday. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.